The next case is 06-1647 and 1855, Philip J. Chavat versus Thomas N. Ryan, DDS. Mr. Farron.
Good morning, Mr. Chief Justice and members of this honorable court. I'm very pleased to be here today on behalf of my client, Mr. Philip Chavat, the appellant in this case. I'm joined at counsel table this morning by Assistant Attorney General Robert Crumman, who will argue on behalf of Amicus Attorney General Mark Dan. If it pleases the court and all goes according to plan, I will argue for 7 minutes, followed by Mr. Crumman's 5-minute presentation, and reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal.
You need to watch your time on the clock there and make that all happen.
We'll try to do so, Your Honor. Thank you. We're here before the court on a case involving claims brought under the Federal Telephone Consumer Protection Act of 1991 and the Consumer Sales Practices Act of Ohio. There are essentially three issues before the court today, two under the TCPA that are definitional, but these are terms that are important because under the Telephone Consumer Protection Act, if a telemarketer violates one of the statutory provisions or a regulation, the consumer may, if they prove their case, recover $500 in statutory damages. If the consumer can prove that the violation was either knowing or willful, a consumer may recover additional remedies up to $1,500. And so the definitions of knowing and willful are important. They have so far escaped ruling by other courts of this level around the country, and therefore I'm sure many eyes are upon this court and how it will define those terms. The Congress, in enacting the Telephone Consumer Protection Act, did not see fit to define the term knowingly. It left that to the courts, and therefore we must look to federal law to define that term. Knowingly is defined in the Bryan case that we cite, and that was adopted by the Sixth District Court of Appeals in the Reichenbach decision. We submit that the definition of knowingly should be that the caller, the telemarketer, simply knew that they were performing an act. And then if the act is shown to violate the law, a knowing violation has been established. This is a rather straightforward definition and does not require any level of culpability to be proven on the part of the telemarketer. Now, willfully, Congress did see fit to define that term. In another section of the Communications Act of 1934, and that is the law that the Telephone Consumer Protection Act is an amendment to, the Communication Act of 1934 defines willfully in section 312F to mean, when used in reference to the commission or omission of any act, it means the conscious and deliberate commission or omission of such act, irrespective of any intent to violate any provision of the act. Since that provision was enacted, the FCC has also adopted that same definition of willful in regard to a recent telemarketing decision, and we submitted that to this court in our supplemental authority in May of this year. And that is a case of the Federal Communication Commission's order of forfeiture issued in the matter of Dynasty Mortgage. In footnote 86 of that decision, the court notes that willful, in the context of the Telephone Consumer Protection Act, means the violator knew that he was doing the act in question, initiating a telephone solicitation. The FCC continued on, a violator need not know that his action or inaction constitutes a violation. Ignorance of the law is not a defense or mitigating circumstance. And so we have Congress in section 312F of the Communication Act defining willful. We have the FCC adopting and utilizing that decision recently in a telemarketing case involving someone's violation of the do not call list. And so we respectfully submit that the court should adopt the appellant's second proposition of law in defining willfully, as I've just outlined for the court. The third issue has effectively been eliminated from our reading of Appellee's brief. The third issue involved the definition of the term knowing under the Consumer Sales Practices Act. This court in the Einhorn case some years ago determined that knowingly, the language that a person knowingly committed an act for purposes of determining whether the individual might recover attorney's fees under the CSPA, requires that the supplier have committed a deceptive or unconscionable act or practice, but the statutory language does not state that the supplier must act with knowledge that his acts violate the law. In brief, Appellee has conceded that that definition is correct. Then what we would ask this court to do is adopt our third proposition of law and also remand this case to the Court of Appeals and then to the trial court to apply that proper standard. For the standard that was applied by the court, the trial court, was not this standard. Instead, the trial court applied, it required a level of culpability on the part of the defendant, and the Court of Appeals affirmed that ruling. And so if the wrong standard was applied by the trial court, the affirmation by the Court of Appeals, I think, necessarily would have to be found by this court to have been improper. And therefore, we would ask this court to remand the case on the first proposition of law, the definition of the term knowingly for purposes of the Telephone Consumer Protection Act would be as we have proposed, and that is that where a plaintiff demonstrates that the defendant had knowledge of the facts constituting the offense, irrespective of whether the defendant knew that its conduct constituted a violation of the TCPA or any regulations promulgated thereunder. We would also ask that the court remand the case on our second proposition of law that the term willfully, derived from Section 312 of the Communication Act, means the voluntary commission of an act or omission, irrespective of whether the act or omission is known or intended to violate the law. And then third, that the court reaffirm its finding in Einhorn as to the definition of knowingly under the CSPA, and that the courts be instructed to apply those definitions in reviewing the claims the appellant brought in the court below. Unless there are any questions, I'll yield to Mr. Crumman.
Thank you, Mr. Fairman.
Thank you.
Mr. Crumman.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, the Ohio Attorney General's office participates today on two relatively straightforward issues. As the appellant has already pointed out, the parties now agree in briefing that Einhorn controls the definition of knowingly under the CSPA, and because the appellate court failed to apply de novo review to the decision of the trial court, we ask for reversal and remand on that issue. On the second issue, under the TCPA, the lower courts simply got the wrong standard for knowingly. We believe that the U.S. Supreme Court's decision in Bryan versus the United States provides the proper definition for that term for three reasons. First, the TCPA allows up to treble damages for either a willful or a knowing violation, not a single higher standard of willful and knowing. The lower court's reinterpretation of knowingly as requiring either a culpable state of mind or a purposeful violation of the law unnecessarily reads knowing out of the statute. Second, the TCPA has twice been amended, first in 2003 and again in 2005, since the Supreme Court's decision in Bryan. If Congress intended that triple damages be awarded only in the cases of willful violations, it would have so amended the statute. Finally, ignoring the definition set forth in Bryan, the lower courts unnecessarily weakened the protections of the TCPA and undermined congressional intent to create a robust private enforcement mechanism. At heart, the laws at issue are remedial statutes designed to protect both consumers and law-abiding businesses. Essentially, these laws are written to level the playing field.
Counsel, let me change the facts on you just a little bit to test the definitions that you would have us apply. I assume this individual had gone through the process to be on the do not call list.
No, Your Honor. My understanding is Mr. Charvat is not on the do not call list.
He's not.
That's my understanding, Your Honor.
S- So the act protects him, even though he's not on the do not call list.
Correct, Your Honor. The TCPA is a comprehensive telemarketing law. It deals not only with the do not call list, but also other telemarketing issues such as junk faxes and unsolicited pre-recorded phone calls. Okay. And this,
he undertook some effort, didn't he, when he got the call to advise them that he didn't want anything further?
My understanding of the facts of the case are that Mr. Charvat received the pre-recorded telephone call from Mr. Ryan, in which he didn't identify either the contact information, and Mr. Charvat contacted Mr. Ryan regarding his do-not-call policy, which the appellee did not provide.
And does that make a difference?
In what way, Your Honor?
Failure to provide when requested.
Well, the failure to provide a do-not-call list when requested by a consumer would be a violation of the TCPA, as it's been interpreted by the courts. If there are no other questions, we'll reserve the rest of our time. Thank you,
Mr. Crumman. Mr. Green.
Morning, Chief Justice, Your Honors. May it please the court, I'm Matthew Green with the law firm Schottenstein, Zox & Dunn. With me is my colleague and co-counsel, John McDonald. We represent appellees in this case. On December 9, 2003, appellees, after consulting with the Attorney General's office regarding compliance with the federal do not call list, caused a single pre-recorded phone call to be placed to appellant's residence. In response to appellant's complaint, appellees unsuccessfully attempted to settle this case for $6,000. After summary judgment briefing, the trial court awarded appellant $1,200 in statutory damages. On appeal, the 10th District awarded appellant $4,600 in statutory penalties. However, both the trial court and the Court of Appeals correctly declined appellant's request to award treble damages and attorney's fees under the federal TCPA and the Ohio CSPA, respectively. Those are the issues before this court. And this court should affirm the 10th District's decision in full. Appellant's appeal raises issues relating to both the Ohio Consumer Sales Practices Act and the Federal Telephone Consumer Protection Act. I will address the Ohio Consumer Sales Protection Act related issues first. First and foremost, the 10th District correctly set forth the standard for awarding attorney's fees under the Consumer Sales Practices Act. Second, as argued in appellee's brief, any argument that the 10th District improperly reviewed the trial court's decision is not before this court at this time. Proposition of law number 3, which this court accepted for review, states, and I quote, "The term knowingly, as used in the Ohio Consumer Sales Practices Act, refers to the intentional commission of an act or practice that violates the act, not the commission of an act or practice that is intended or known to violate the act." Appellees concede that proposition of law number 3 is a correct statement of Ohio law. The 10th District's decision, however, in no way conflicts with proposition of law number 3. The 10th District's decision cited Einhorn. It didn't attempt to criticize it or narrow it in any way. The only thing the 10th District's decision did was to note that the award of attorney's fees under the Consumer Sales Practices Act is discretionary. Both Einhorn and Revised Code 1345.09 explicitly recognize that even if there is a knowing violation of the Consumer Sales Practices Act, attorney's fees is discretionary. Appellant and the Attorney General's office seem to be arguing an issue not before this court. Specifically, they appear to be arguing that the Court of Appeals applied the wrong standard of review because the trial court made an error of law in evaluating the Einhorn standard. Importantly, however, that is not the issue currently before this court.
But why shouldn't the case be remanded for the trial court to apply the correct standard? Use his or her discretion, the court used its discretion in applying the correct standard.
Well, Your Honor, before the 10th District Court of Appeals, appellees argued that the trial court had discretion to award attorney's fees, exercised that discretion, and declined to award attorney's fees. The 10th District agreed with appellee's position. There is nothing wrong or incorrect about the 10th District's decision. And further, I would say the issue of standard of review was not accepted by this court. This court's order accepting jurisdiction on the appeal states, and I quote, "The court accepts the appeal on propositions of law numbers 2 and 3. Thus, the court specifically declined to accept jurisdiction on proposition of law number 1, which was the only proposition of law in which appellant raised the issue of standard of review, and which arguably would encompass the arguments he's attempting to make here. Supreme Court Practice Rule 3, Section 6 indicates that in discretionary appeals, a court can order briefing of the entire case or only select issues. Thus, by declining to accept review over proposition of law number 1, this court's review is limited to proposition of law number 3.
But you agree that the Einhorn versus Ford Motor Company sets forth the correct definition of knowingly as used in the consumer sales.
Yes, appellees readily concede that Einhorn is the law.
And if the trial court didn't utilize that definition, shouldn't the trial court be instructed that that's the definition that we want utilized in accordance with Prop 3, which you agree with?
Respectfully, Your Honor, appellees would submit that the trial court reached the right decision.
It's not about reaching the right decision, maybe the right decision for the wrong reason, but I guess what we want to try to clarify, not just for this trial judge, but for all of them, and for all of the potential callers, I mean, we don't want anybody to hang up on the callers, right? We're not going to get hung up on here. I guess what we want to do is establish what the definitions are of these terms for all. And you agree that Einhorn sets forth the correct definition, if I understand the argument. Am I right about that?
Yes, that's correct, Your Honor.
Okay, so why couldn't we, as the Chief said, why shouldn't we send that back to the trial judge to follow proper definition when both you and opposing counsel agree that that's what the law is, and we should have the trial courts apply that law?
Respectfully, Your Honor, I would submit that the issues raised before the 10th District and on the issues the 10th District ruled on, the 10th District ruled correctly. There is no dispute even in Einhorn or in the text of 1345.09 that the award of attorney's fees under the Consumer Sales Practices Act, is discretionary. The 10th District correctly recognized that it was a discretionary standard of review. And some appellees wouldn't object to this court in any decision sort of reaffirming its decision in Einhorn and setting forth specific instructions regarding the Einhorn standard. However,
guess you can't really stop us anyway if we're going to do it.
Huh? That is correct, Your Honor. But I would say that in reaffirming Einhorn and setting forth the standard of knowingly moving forward, there is no reason why this court cannot still affirm the 10th District's decision in full, because the 10th District in no way made an incorrect statement of law, and because the 10th District decision is in no way in conflict.
Let me just ask you to follow up with respect to the second proposition of law with respect to the word willfully.
Yes.
And the Telephone Consumer Protection Act.
Okay.
Do you also agree that that is the correct statement as defined by Congress of willfully?
If you're referring to the definition of willfully in 47 U.S.C. Section 312.
Yes, I'm sorry, 312F.
Respectfully, Your Honor, and switching gears to the issues relating to the TCPA,
yes.
I would disagree with appellant's position on that issue. The definition of willful in 47 U.S.C. Section 312, while both Section 312 and Section 227 are in the same title of the U.S. Code, they're in completely different parts of the United States Code. Section 312 deals specifically with violations relating to radio broadcasters. So appellant would submit that the definition of willful in Section 312 isn't necessarily relevant to the definition of willful in Section 227. Actually, if Your Honor will excuse me. I apologize, Your Honor.
No problem.
Appellees would, on the definition of willful, appellees would actually like to point the court's attention to the United States Supreme Court decision in Bryan versus United States, which is actually a decision that was cited and relied upon by appellant and the Attorney General's office. In Bryan versus United States, the United States Supreme Court stated that as a general matter, a, quote, willful act is one undertaken with a bad purpose. In other words, in order to establish a willful violation of a statute, the government must prove that the defendant acted with knowledge that his conduct was unlawful. I would submit to the court that in weighing the authority between a definition of willful in an unrelated part of Title 47 and Supreme Court case law, that the definition of willful set forth by the Supreme Court should control in this case.
Thank you.
Finally, the final issue before this court is the definition of knowingly under the federal TCPA. Appellees admit this is a closer call. However, appellees still suggest the court should conclude that knowingly under Section 227 of the TCPA requires some sort of culpable state of mind. The first factor weighing in favor of this conclusion is the text of the statute itself. Section 227 doesn't say that treble damages are awardable if a defendant knowingly causes a phone call to be made. Instead, Section 227 says treble damages are awardable if the defendant knowingly violated the statute. Even in Bryan versus...
If we were to take the interpretation of knowingly in terms of you just know you are making a phone call, then the only acts this would not apply to would be accidental phone calls, like you reach someone accidentally because you misdialed. I mean, that would then make it absolutely apply to every single phone call if we took that interpretation, that it simply means dialing the number is a knowing act.
I agree with Your Honor that under the definition of knowingly that appellant suggests, it would be a very rare situation in which which someone would not have knowingly, committed the act. In this case, appellees conceded before the trial court that they knowingly caused these phone calls.
What you're arguing is that because your client supposedly checked with the AGs, checked with the do not call list, which the plaintiff has chosen not to be on, and placed it thinking he was legitimate, that therefore does not constitute a knowing violation.
That is correct, Your Honor. And also with regards to policy matters, and an appellant raised the argument that Section 227 is remedial in nature. Appellees would disagree with that characterization. Appellees believe that Section 227 is penal in nature. The purpose of Section 227 is not to allow any sort of recovery for any damages. In fact, I think the record demonstrates that appellant probably didn't suffer any damages at all, and maybe...
If we were to find the definitions as proposed by the appellant and send it back on a remand, is the judge still have discretion whether or not to award treble damages and or attorney fees, in your opinion?
The trial court would still retain discretion on both of those matters. However, I would submit to this court that in light of the facts of this case and in light of the law as it stands in its relation to the statute at issue, that it would be a tremendous waste of judicial resources to remand this matter on these issues back to the trial court. As indicated, even if this court affirms the 10th District's decision in full, appellees are still subject to $4,600 in statutory penalties. Appellees believe that is a penal sum. I mean, the purpose of Section 227 is to act as a deterrent, and it certainly, even if this court fully affirms the 10th District's decision in this case, the deterrent purpose of Section 227 is still served in full. In sum, appellees believe that the 10th District correctly decided the issues before it, that it correctly set forth the law on both the Ohio Consumer Sales Practices Act and the federal TCPA, and that this court should affirm the the 10th District's decision in full.
Thank you, Mr. Green.
Thank you.
Mr. Farron, you've saved almost 4.5 minutes of your time.
I did want to follow up on a couple of the questions that I heard from the panel. First, if Section 312F is not, in this court's view, binding in defining willfully, I would hasten to remind this court that the FCC, in a recent pronouncement, has adopted essentially that same definition. And this court found previously in Charvat versus Dispatch Printing Company that the FCC's interpretation of terms that apply to its laws and its interpretation of its regulations should be deferred to when it makes sense to do so, and it certainly does here, in that the FCC took the time to define the term willfully in the context of a Telephone Consumer Protection Act case.
Counsel, you disagree that we should be following Bryan in that regard?
I'm sorry.
Do you disagree we should be following Bryan in that regard, the Supreme Court case?
Bryan is the knowingly definition. I was speaking to the willful definition under 312F.
Okay.
Appellant certainly urges this court to follow the definition the Supreme Court adopted in Bryan for knowingly.
Thank you.
A knowing violation.
Excuse me, Justice. Go ahead.
So, the same question I asked your opposing counsel, if we affirm and accept your, or if we accept your definitions and send it back on a remand, does the trial court still have discretion whether or not to A, award attorney fees, and separately, discretion whether or not to award treble?
Yes, and hopefully it would apply the proper standard. That's following up on a discussion about the abuse of discretion or whether the trial court has discretion. I would submit that it is an abuse of discretion for a trial court to apply the wrong legal standard. The trial court is entrusted with discretion within certain legal parameters. In this case, the trial court used improper definitions in exercising its discretion. Who's to say what the trial court would have done if it had applied the proper definition of the terms and conducted that analysis? And the same is true with respect to the award of attorney's fees under the CSP under 134509F. One thing, Justice Pfeiffer was inquiring about the do not call list and the nature of this call. This call was a pre-recorded voice message call, and therefore it was per se unlawful and has been since 1991. Any such call made by a business to a consumer where the business has not obtained the consumer's prior express consent is a violation of the law. Mr. Charvat being on the do not call list or not being on the do not call list would have no impact at all on that fact. In fact, this call violated the law in several ways. It was, first of all, placed without Mr. Charvat's express approval. It did not provide the name of the caller. It did not provide the telephone number or address of the caller. Both of these things are required under the TCPA. And then subsequently, when Mr. Charvat managed to identify the dentist who had made this pre-recorded call to his home, he wrote to him and asked him for a copy of his do not call policy, and the doctor failed to do so.
So the trial court, though, found that you can't add all of these up, right?
And the Court of Appeals corrected that in finding that the law does provide, in the case of a pre-recorded call, for multiple violations per call. The law is written in such a way that a consumer may recover based upon a violation of the law, not just per call basis. So the doctor who had undoubtedly attended college, dental school, sat for his boards, purchased all the proper equipment, engaged someone to provide him with malpractice coverage and set up his careful dental practice, didn't do anything in that regard in setting up his telemarketing campaign. And for that reason, although I'm not without compassion for a small businessman who violates the law, it's a beyond dispute that the doctor violated federal and state telemarketing laws in multiple ways, and this is the only case in which anyone has called him to account, although he made undoubtedly a large number of calls. Are there any other questions?
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Farron. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.